Week 15 was full of wild finishes and wacky moments. How it went so wrong for the Steelers on a stunning final play against the Patriots. Weirdness in Oakland as the Cowboys stay alive. Nick Foles gets it done. Russell Wilson's nightmare against the Rams. Aaron Rodgers' rocky return and a dangerous hit delivered by Thomas Davis. We are covering all of it on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. That was week 15 and it was completely insane. It was the most fascinating day of football I can remember in a while. Just wild results and just a lot of insanity folded into those wild results.
Yeah, big time endings. We can just dive right into this.
Number one.
Patriots Steelers. Let's start with the end, because that seems very poetic. This one, boy. So, the Jesse James catch. It's not a catch, according to the rules. And we've been over this a million times, and mm-hmm. I don't know. I hate the rule. I don't know. How much you hate the rule, Andy? Do you hate it as much as me?
No, I am. I understand why someone would hate the rule. I'm comfortable with the nature of the rule, because you have to draw the line somewhere, and at some point, when does a catch become a catch? When is it not a catch? And I think if that conversation involves the ball touching the ground, if you want to make a hard line and say, okay, no catch, because the essence of a catch is ball not touching the ground, I'm okay with that. If someone totally disagrees, I understand that. I was fine with the Dez Bryant ruling on the Tremont Williams play a few years ago. I mm-hmm. liked the ruling. And I'm fine with this one now as much as I would hate it if I were a Steeler fan.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the rule, but I think there's no disputing that it was properly applied in this case. Now, next play. And at this point, the Steelers had the ball in the 10-yard line. There was about 30 seconds to go. They throw short, and Darius Heyward-Bey mm-hmm. doesn't get out of bounds. So now it's third and goal from the 7. Steelers are hustling to the line. There's about 20 seconds left when that play ended. And it was a little bit chaotic. And I liked the decision to go for the fake spike. I don't know how necessary the fake spike was, but it certainly fooled everyone on the left side of the Steelers' left side, the defenders on that side of the formation, because no one on that side moved. None of the Steelers' receivers moved either, because there was some sort of miscommunication there.
And that may have been what held the defenders still, too.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, they're watching the guy they're about to guard. They're not necessarily watching Roethlisberger.
You could argue
a fake spike is less advantageous in the tight red zone like that, because you don't play zone quite the same way. You're going to match up a little bit
yeah.
more in it. So I don't know who's even watching Roethlisberger right there. And I don't know. Go ahead, though. Keep telling your story, and we'll
work our way through this. Well, the pass rush certainly stopped. So did the offensive linemen. Everyone just sort of stopped up front except for the guys on the right side of the offensive formation, and that would have been whoever's on the edge there was still sort of coming. Jesse James was sort of feebly, half-heartedly blocking. And then you had Rodgers, and you had Rowe chasing Rodgers, and you had McCourty in the mix there. I liked everything that happened on that play for the Steelers, except Ben, once he realizes that it is not a layup at that point, just has to throw the ball out of the end zone, and then they kick
yeah.
a field goal, and that's all over. But I was hearing from a lot of people. I am friends with a lot of Patriots fans and a lot of Steelers fans. And I was hearing from a lot of people saying a lot of people thought that was fourth down, and they couldn't believe that the Steelers were going for it. And Romo had it. I mean, Romo, if you were watching the game and listening to Romo, Romo mm-hmm. was correct in pointing out, run a play here, run a fade. I was fine throwing over the middle of the field. You just had to be 100% sure it was a catch or it was an incompletion. You couldn't throw it into traffic there, and that's what happened.
Well, and see, that's the problem is, and we can talk, you know, Roethlisberger had his explanation of what went on afterwards, and that was a little confusing, and there's a whole other conversation to be had about should you even fake spike there, and whose call was that, and who called the code red on the spike, so to speak, and we'd only be guessing. I mean, we're not going to get into that. We don't know. But the design is flawed, because my guess is that fake spike play is designed for the far red zone, not the tight red zone like they were in,
mm-hmm.
because there's no reason whatsoever to have a slant on your fake spike. All you're doing is running the receiver into the defenders. Whether they react to the spike or not is irrelevant because they're just standing there. So the route took him into the defenders. Romo was 100% right. If you do run the fake spike, you need to have it be a fade because you want to have to only fake out one guy, the guy guarding the receiver you're targeting, rather than hoping that the fake spike fakes out the entire rest of the defense, which odds are it will not. So it was a really bad play design, and which leads me to believe that can't possibly be their fake spike play for the tight red zone, or when they installed or drew it up, they did plan on running it down there, because you would never call that kind of a play off a fake spike. So something's askew here, Gary.
And that's how it played out. Daron Harmon had no idea a play was happening until the ball sort of fell into his hands, and then he had the game-winning interception. Yeah, it's, you know, are you going to necessarily, if it's simply he's signaling, and he's clearly signaling, I don't know why Roethlisberger is so weird in these post-game explanations of things that are pretty obvious that he's not being completely forthright. I'm assuming Todd Haley is speaking into his helmet at that point. He had been signaling spike, and clearly a bunch of guys on the in the formation thought he was going to spike the ball because they didn't move. And if it's basically a signal to Eli Rogers, just sort of a get open, do what you want to do, let's pretend you're Antonio Brown. I guess for Eli Rogers, you're probably not running a fade there because Eli Rogers isn't the type of guy who runs that kind of route and wins in the red zone. So,
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, look, that's the other thing. That play's probably drawn up for Antonio Brown, and Rogers is the guy filling that spot. It's a good point.
I was fine. Even when it went haywire, I mean, all that had to happen was throw the ball out of bounds. And really, even throwing it into traffic there, it's still unlikely to be an interception. It's not like he threw it into a defender's chest. Eric Rowe still had to make a nice play on that. They got tangled just enough for Rowe to sort of recover and get his hand on that ball. It's a nice play by the Patriots.
Yeah, it's
not so much by Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and no, I think it's more bad quarterback play than good defense. It was both. It was certainly a combination of both. But, gosh, a quarterback, especially a veteran one, needs to know better. I think at the beginning of the snap and what we just talked about with the design of the fake and why you're even faking a spike, and then once you see how it unfolded, you're right, throw it away. But easy for us to sit here and say that. And Roethlisberger's made more of these plays in his career than he's missed, and this is going to happen sometimes. And this does not wreck the season. It might mean you have to go on the road now in the playoffs, but it goes that way sometimes.
Yeah, got a little greedy. Maybe got a little greedy after seeing what Tom Brady did to that defense on the previous drive. Of course, the other big story in this game, Antonio Brown down with a torn calf muscle. The vague timetable is he will be back for the playoffs. We don't know if that's early playoffs, late playoffs, but he is expected back. It's not something that requires surgery. It'll just be a rest type of thing. So, but, you know, we saw this team last year in the postseason. No Martavis Bryant, so it was kind of like Antonio Brown and, you know, just sort of some rotating pieces on the other side of the field. Now, obviously, they have Bryant, but, you know, playing, they're down a starting receiver again, but obviously Antonio Brown is more than, you know, what they were missing last year with Bryant. So what do they do offensively at this point?
I think you ride Le'Veon Bell a little bit more, and they have the power running game to do that. And by the way, Gary, I think this kind of solves the whole Antonio Brown MVP discussion, doesn't it? Because he's out for a little while, and I don't get the sense that people are scared to death about that or fretting it or saying, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to the Steelers now? Can they? I mean, if this were Ben Roethlisberger out, we'd probably leave the show with that conversation more than the ending of the game even. So it's, you know, it's just food for thought here is how valuable is a wide receiver. You can continue to play without Antonio Brown for a little while. If he were out long term, that's a problem. I'm not trying to disparage in any sense Antonio Brown here, but they are equipped to survive short term without him, and I don't think that would be true with their quarterback. So they're still fine. They can still play the same way.
Yep, and they still have to play their way into that first round bye. At this point, the Jaguars are still a factor right there, and we won't dive too deep into playoff scenarios at this point. But Steelers, if they win out, they will most likely have the 2 seed. There's an outside chance they can get the 1 seed, but obviously they are game and a half back of the Patriots at this point. They play at Houston on Monday and then host the Browns, so you would think that's a couple of wins coming here for the Steelers.
Number 2.
This was the Sunday Nighter, and this was two very proud franchises, the Cowboys and the Raiders. This was a sort of a big Q rating type of matchup for Sunday Night Football. It was not beautiful football, and it was, I don't know, man. So some of the stuff that happened in the fourth quarter of this game, it was a bit of a circus, let's say that.
Well, and I can't believe how many times we've seen this fumble into the end zone play have significant impact. They're going to have to look at that rule in the offseason. We've had a long discussion about that already. I believe it was week 4, Todd Gurley on the fumble against Seattle.
Yep.
And then the Austin Seferian Jenkins and the Jets-Patriots game, and now this one. And there have been others. They're going to have to examine that rule in the offseason. But just looking at, let's just set that play aside, the rest of the game, and I guess the discussion becomes, how do we feel about Dallas now? You know, I was a little disappointed at the start of the show or start of the game here when NBC explained the playoff scenarios. I found myself thinking, is that it? Like, these teams are on the outside looking in, well on the outside looking in. A lot has to happen still for them to get anywhere, and Oakland, I think, is totally out of the equation. You know, maybe they have 1% chance, but they're gone. Let's set them aside. Dallas still is not anywhere near the driver's seat, depending on what happens with Atlanta. It'll be interesting to see how these last few weeks play out, because I think Dallas, if they get in with Ezekiel Elliott back and the way that defense is playing, I think they're as dangerous as almost any team in the NFC. They might not be the best, but they're capable of competing with anybody. Can they get in?
Yeah, and absolutely. Look, they've certainly got an uphill battle here. If they beat the Seahawks, and look, the Seahawks are dealing with the issues of their own at this point, they'll get the tiebreaker there, but they don't have the tiebreaker over Atlanta, and if they're basically a game and a half back with 2 to go, that's going to be tough to make up that much ground. But this was they got the long fake punt run. It looked early on that they might sort of dominate this game, and Raiders started to move the ball late in the first half. Cowboys end up, they revert to the long fake punt to sort of get the ball moving on a drive in the second half. And then they get the bizarre fourth and inches conversion where no one was, I don't know, Gene Steratore brought out the folded piece of paper that everyone will talk about for quite a while, and apparently couldn't fit it between the ball and the yard marker. And that's how they determined that it was a first down, which is not a very scientific way to do things.
No, and I chalk that up. That's how it goes. That's a random draw. They're not spotting these balls 100% precisely anyway. So it just goes that way sometimes. It's amazing we don't have more conversations about spotting of the ball, isn't it? Given how it happens on every single play and how yardage is the heart of the game and accumulating yardage and moving the ball, we just always kind of just assume, all right, they spotted the ball, it's fine. Nobody ever says anything about it. You'd think it'd be like, all right, I know, like in baseball, you're not supposed to argue balls and strikes. I wonder if in football it's a little bit like you're not supposed to argue with spotting of the ball, because it just would be every single time, nebulous, again and again and again. And this was one, though, where the conversation does shift to that. Finally, spotting of the ball.
Yeah. And I enjoy the theater of the chain gang and the yard markers and all that stuff, but it's absurd. It's an absurd way to do it, especially in 2017. There's no way they can't put, a GPS chip in the ball and be able to basically figure out exactly where it should be in relation. I mean, they can get a fake yellow line across the field, so they can certainly do a GPS chip in the ball and figure out whether it reaches that invisible yellow line and go that way. But a little bit of fun tonight, I guess, unless you're a Raiders fan.
Disappointing season for the Raiders, too.
Yeah.
They never found their identity, did they? We never quite figured out what they were offensively, and defensively, I think they made the change at coordinator, which came with a philosophical change as well. They looked like a different defense under John Pagano. I think they waited just a little too long to make that change.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, we talked about this in the preseason. You know, Raiders were one of those teams, won a lot of close games last year. The AFC West, we thought, was going to be a very strong division. And we sort of said, well, you know, this is a team that could slip back to 8-8, 7-9, something like this. But, I mean, they've looked bad doing it. The entire division has looked bad, but the Raiders have looked especially bad doing it. You know, Carr has slid back. You're right. They never found an offensive identity. They never sort of got things cleaned up in that secondary, which, I mean, they have some okay pieces back there, and they spent a couple of high draft picks, and it's still just not a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all you can say about it at this point. Just an affirming mm-hmm, which is the opposite of my my usual grunts on the show. There you go. That's a very good impression of me.
Number three.
Packers-Panthers. Look, Packers similarly disappointing at this point. I think they're not mathematically out of it, but for all intents and purposes, they are out of it. They might be mathematically out of it. Aaron Rodgers came back, and look, it was kind of like, is he superhuman, or is he going to have some level of rust? And it was the latter.
Absolutely. He underthrew the ball on a number of throws, a bunch of different types of throws, too. Downfield, vertical throws, lob throws, or air under the ball, rope throws, where he's throwing it on a rope. I mean, he just wasn't quite himself in this game. They played on schedule the first few series, and I thought, okay, here we go. We have a disciplined Aaron Rodgers today. It's a great way to get back, throwing these slant patterns, quick step, drop back timing. But as the game progressed, that rhythm deteriorated, and some of that's Carolina's defense are very good on the back end this year. But overall, Rodgers didn't throw the ball well enough. He can usually get away with playing that on schedule, off schedule, where is he at? He's such a good thrower, it doesn't matter. That was not the case today.
Let's talk about the Panthers for a little bit, because they are obviously still very much in the playoff hunt. They are probably going to go at this point. We talked about their offense a lot early in the season, and I feel like we sort of ignored them a little bit as they sort of... It feels like 2015 with this offense again, I guess is what I'd say. I mean, Newton isn't quite as sharp, the protection isn't quite as good, but certainly their approach at this point feels a lot more like 2015 with some Christian McCaffrey sprinkled into it.
It does. The one difference, I think, is that they don't have that foundational running game still. Cam mm-hmm. Newton is having a tremendous season running the ball, and that's really been, you could argue, that's been the most important element of their offense this year. And in 2015, that was a piece of the offense, but it was Jonathan Stewart, it was Mike Tolbert a little bit, and just kind of the smash-mouth run game. We still haven't gotten the consistency from that, but Newton is such a unique talent that they're making it work. And now they've got Greg Olsen back, and we're starting to see a little bit of a return to the vertical passing game. He had an excellent game today. Green Bay could not cover him down the seams. McCaffrey, I think, is getting better, and they're getting more comfortable with him and vice versa. So that is, it's an offense that has found its an identity. It's not the identity they thought they'd have. It's not the one they sought out to achieve. It's a blend of a little bit of everything. They've kind of become a spread team a little bit here. They spread out of running personnel at times, which can be very hard to handle if you're a defense. And then they've incorporated McCaffrey into what they already do well. And I think that's good coaching. It's smart coaching. And really, Gary, frankly, they had to play that way, because if you have Cam Newton, there's two things that are obvious. One is you're dumb if you don't use his legs. They're too valuable. And two is he's a power thrower, not a precision thrower, and your passing designs need to account for that. And that tends to be more downfield passes rather than quick timing and rhythm throws.
And look, defensively, they kept the blitz up. They kept the heat on Aaron Rodgers today. Some teams don't do that, but certainly when Rodgers is coming off the injury, they did not hesitate to keep blitzing as they have all season.
Yeah, they blitz more than any team in the NFC, and I believe the only team that blitzes more in the NFL is the Cleveland Browns, and the Browns are not as effective blitzing as the Panthers are. It's a five-man rush. That's their identity now. Steve Wilks, their new defensive coordinator, has really overhauled a lot. They've been a four-man rush team for so many years. Even in obvious passing situations, that was their approach. Now it's a five-man rush, and it's on almost every down. They blitz on first and second down off the edge. And I know for certain, Ron Rivera has told me one of the reasons they are comfortable doing that, they believe that edge blitzing on early downs serves as a run blitz as well. And he's right. I mean, they do, especially against zone teams and read option type teams. In Green Bay, I know they're not read option. They did have one in the game today. But a lot of NFL running games, when you blitz off the edge, that's a run tactic as much as it is a pass rush. So they do that, and then they've got those speedy linebackers. And why that's important is because when you blitz, you now have three men underneath instead of four defenders underneath. The linebacker speed allows you to do that. Keekly, Shaq Thompson, who hasn't been healthy lately, but he'll be back soon. Thomas Davis, when he's not blitzing, they're back there. Those might as well be four men. They're so fast. So they give those guys more area to cover, and those guys are capable of handling that.
Yeah, and we have one more hit to talk about in this game, Andy. The Thomas Davis on Davante Adams block after one of the Rodgers interceptions. Suspension or no suspension? I feel like that's the new really not fun game that we play on this show.
Well, for one, Thomas, and this should not factor into the decision, but Thomas Davis felt terrible about it. I mean, you could tell he was upset with himself, and that is, you know, he's not remotely close to a dirty player. He has no track record of any of this. He's one of the NFL's really good guys. And maybe that part should factor into the conversation, is that Thomas Davis has a perfectly clean record, an exemplary record, in fact. And he's not a blocker very often. So
yes,
it's not like he's practiced those scenarios a lot. I would say no suspension, but if they do suspend, I understand it, because you're not just impacting Thomas Davis when you suspend, you're sending the message across the entire NFL. And suspensions are going to be what changes the culture in the league. The fines are not enough, and the 15-yard penalties probably are not enough, at least on a week-to-week basis. Mm-hmm. When you start suspending guys, game checks, which are much more than the fines, that changes it. So I would understand if they do suspend. I would hope they wouldn't, because of who it is and the circumstances around it.
Oh, it's home against the Bucs next week, so, and then they finish at Atlanta. So maybe we're not talking about a crippling situation if indeed he is suspended. I think he's suspended for all those hits at this point, and that's how you take him out of the game.
Okay, so you would suspend Thomas Davis?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I agree with everything you said. I mean, he is. He is a model football player in this league, and I think he's the kind of guy that you would hope you would have across the league. And you know, it was one bang bang play. These guys just gotta get it programmed out of everyone. If you want to basically avoid a lot of the ugliness that we've seen this year, because it's affecting the game. It's affecting people's enjoyment of the game as well.
Number four.
Topic number four, we're actually, I guess an awkward transition would be to a guy we thought would be suspended last week and was not. That would be Michael Bennett and Sheldon Richardson on that defensive line. And it kind of looked like, you know, KJ Wright was out. They got all the injuries in the secondary. Bobby Wagner was playing. Looked like he was playing at about 40%, let alone 70 or 80% on that bad hamstring today. And if they were without their defensive linemen, it's essentially a preseason. It's like fourth quarter of a preseason game is what that roster turns into. But it really made no difference. The Rams put together one of the most dominant performances of the season, and they did it in Seattle, and they have clinched a playoff spot with it.
Yeah, quite impressive. To go against a team that you played already, to go on the road and do it, and Sean McVay, Jared Goff, this remade Rams team, that defense under Wade Phillips. This has been one of the great turnaround seasons we've seen in a long time when you consider the totality of it, how they've gone from worst to best offensively and how they have maintained all the positives of their defense in the process. I mean, this is a really complete team, and it happened overnight.
Yeah, and look, they've even in the Jeff Fisher days, they gave Russell Wilson, the Seahawks, problems with the defense here. Andy, you had written about Russell Wilson this week, and I was checking on Twitter, and everyone said you were wrong, but this is what you referred to, the inconsistency of what this offense is sometimes, and this was the bad side of the inconsistent.
Yeah, and I think what you get with that, it's an inherent inconsistency that comes with Wilson's style of play. Now, look, the discussion got washed away by the part where I said Matthew Stafford, I'd take him over Wilson, and I would. And by the way, they're both 8-6. Neither one has a running game. Wilson has a better defense that he plays with, and their numbers are almost equal. Stafford's are slightly better this year. So I was blown away that that was not even a debate, but like people were astounded that someone would take Stafford over Wilson. I can understand why you would take Wilson over Stafford, but that's not that is not an insane take as people wanted to portray it as. Having said that, I think the point Doug Farrar made on Twitter in the Russell Wilson discussion is a good one, is that we need to expand our minds and look at the uniqueness of his quarterbacking and realize that you have to evaluate him differently. And Stafford, a very traditional guy, is much easier to evaluate than Russell Wilson. Wilson is a conundrum because he leaves plays on the field, but he creates plays. And what do you do, and how do you coach that, and what's in between that? And that's all the article was trying to get to the heart of. And I think one thing you do get when you have a quarterback like that is an inherent inconsistency, because there's not really a foundation to lay back on. Running around and scramble drills, they can be mesmerizing, they can be hard to play against, but they're hard to draw up on a week-to-week basis. And I know Seattle, for Doug's point was that Seattle has attempted to do that and has actually done that quite well. And that's a good point. They do a nice job of building around Wilson's mobility. And the Packers do the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. But those are both inconsistent offenses when you consider who they have, their personnel, and the level of achievement they have one week versus another. These sandlot type of QBs, they're not going to be week-to-week QBs for you, and I think that has to be understood too.
Well, one thing that that you have with Wilson is you want a good offensive line, but you can survive without a good offensive line, and they are not just not good, they are quite bad. But look, this was one of those weeks where I don't know if the Rams are just used to seeing Wilson at this point, and they sort of have that that stamina, that ability to contain him that sometimes pass rushers do not when they see him on a more rare basis. But this was they swarmed him and he didn't get away. He was sacked 7 times. He was only 14 for 30, 142 yards. You know, they didn't they had 149 yards of offense in this game. So this was sort of the nightmare scenario for the Seahawks offensively at this point. Certainly defensively, they are not where they have been in the past because of the injuries. But the whole Stafford Wilson debate is just so stupid to me. It's they're two good players, and like I like this one, I like this one. That's fine. You like whoever you want to like. It's well, comparing the two. If you had two similar players, you could kind of say, but it's saying like I like tacos and I like the fourth season of The Wire, and what do you like better? Oh, you like that better than that? That makes it makes no sense to debate it.
I agree with you, and I wasn't trying to start a debate when I wrote that. I was just framing the conversation around Russell Wilson. And you know, by the way, I wrote 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago now, that I thought Stafford has been a top 2 or 3 quarterback this year. Nobody said anything then. Who did they think I was thinking Russell Wilson was number one that whole time? So I don't get that either, but there's a smart football discussion to be had here, because Russell Wilson is not a black or white QB to analyze. Matthew Stafford is a little more black or white QB to analyze based on history. Russell Wilson's a new style of quarterback. And if we want to have a good, smart football discussion, we can have one. It can be hard to do that sometimes with the nature of social media, we'll call it.
There's only 280 characters to use, Andy. And you got to use as many capital letters as you can. That's how people know you're serious. Oh, the Rams are going to the playoffs. That is the moral of the story here.
And they have a fast defense too. That's a team that's equipped to rally around a QB like Russell Wilson, rally to the ball. And there have been years where they have played just soft zone against them and said, keep Russell Wilson in front of you, we will close the ground between them. And you know, speed on defense could be one way to counter a quarterback like Russell Wilson.
Well, the Seahawks have their work cut out for them. They'll need some help to make the postseason at this point. But 2 weeks ago, plenty will happen.
This is Jim Miller, and Origins is back. Recently, I gave you a behind-the-curtain look into the groundbreaking comedy Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, it's time to take you on another ride, one that's nearly 40 years in the making. Available now, the podcast series Origins with James Andrew Miller, Chapter 2, a deep exploration into the world of ESPN. In 5 different episodes, we will reveal previously unheard and unpredictable moments that turned ESPN from a ramshackle couple buildings into one of the greatest media success stories of all time. Spanning its early beginnings, its meteoric rise, to its current challenge state, you'll hear from all the key players, in front of the camera and behind. Look for Origins with James Andrew Miller on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you download your programs.
Number 5.
This was the Eagles and the Giants. We are talking the Nick Foles-led Eagles at this point, and this is a game that they really had to scrape out. They were sloppy defensively, and I guess that's what would concern me. Foles was fine in this game. His box score numbers will impress people. If you picked him up in fantasy and played him, you're weird, but you were rewarded because he threw 4 touchdown passes. It was a lot of easy throws. I mean, it was a lot of shorter throws. He wasn't good deeper down the field. He had one free one where Roger Cromartie and Eli Apple both jumped on an Alshon Jeffrey slant route, and Trey Burton had no one within 20 yards of him in the end zone. So it was one of those days. Foles was fine. Foles was not problematic. He also didn't win this game single-handedly. But they gave up a lot of big plays to a Giants offense that, they were dormant for a large part of the season. And I guess kind of, pat the Giants on the backs here for figuring out how to move the ball at this point.
Well, a couple of things. Keep in mind, when these teams played back, I think it was in week 3, Philadelphia dinked and dunked the ball in that game as well. Carson Wentz was obviously the QB, and it worked well enough against the Giants, and they pulled out a win late in the game, kind of a close one like this, in fact. They're going to have to play that way with Nick Foles, and that's good coaching to adjust the offense to what Foles does, because what you lose with Carson Wentz out of the lineup are those third down extension type of plays, the improvised plays. We just talked about Sandlot and Wentz, and the reason I love Wentz is because he can go improvise mode without making it all Sandlot. He can keep your structure alive and just extend the play without breaking it down. You don't get that with Nick Foles, not in the same way. He extends them negatively because he's a kind of methodical, slower twitch QB. So you're going to have to adjust the way you play with him, and today was a good start for that. You maybe keep an eye on Philly's defense, because it's bizarre that they didn't have a better day against a team they know well, a team that lacks weapons, and a team that certainly can't block their defensive line if you let them go man-to-man on that. But everybody has these games every once in a while, and the fact that you still win when you do, that's a positive too.
It is. Yeah, Giants end up having touchdown plays of 67 yards and 57 yards, and Eli actually had a really big game here, 431 and 3 touchdowns. But I guess the Giants are a mess defensively. No Landon Collins, and there were so many blown coverages and just not very good football in this game. But if you're the Eagles, you clinch the first round bye in this one, and you got 2 more weeks to sort of figure out exactly what you can be going forward, and if there are any problems with this defense, you they're certainly talented enough, and you got plenty of time to hash it out still. So good news. I don't want to be too negative. A lot of people came after me for being lukewarm on Nick Foles on my wrap-up column. So I'm not down on him. He was fine.
They're going to come after you for that, too. Calling him fine on a day where he had 4 touchdowns.
It was a good 4 touchdowns. But at least one of them I could have thrown and probably left-handed. Andy, before we move on, a couple of programming notes here. First of all, Peter King, the MMQB podcast with Peter King. You might have heard of him. You hopefully have. I don't know how you found us if you didn't know who Peter King was, but he has a podcast. If you aren't subscribing to it, that is a problem because he was actually at Steelers-Patriots doing a very special episode on that game, talked to a bunch of folks involved, and I actually don't know exactly what he got at this point. All I know is it is going to be good, and it is going to be coming out Monday, same day we come out. So our feelings will not be hurt if you stop listening at this point and go jump over to Peter's podcast and hear what he has, because I'm sure it's going to be excellent. On top of that, next 2 weeks, it's going to be a little bit of weird scheduling because of the holidays. We are not going to tape on Christmas Day. We will honor the birth of our Lord, and we will tape on Tuesday the 26th instead. Shelby Royston, because he's awesome, and Chris Basil might chip in too. He is also awesome, but they are going to edit it and turn around for Tuesday the 26th. Probably will be like mid-afternoon, maybe early afternoon, something like that. And then we will tape again on Monday, January 1st, but we won't do the overnight. So it will be out a little bit later in the day than you might be used to. It will be out that Monday, though, and we'll probably take a little more of a look ahead to the postseason, which will, of course, be set at that point. So that's our holiday plans. And
I love this time of year. It's the greatest time of year, isn't it?
It's a very nice time of year. I can't handle it anymore. It's too stressful. There's too much crap going on.
You live in New York where the holidays just a buzzsaw. And I was there. We saw each other last week. I don't know how you can stand that on a day to day basis, especially with all the people around.
We saw each other, Andy. And we were wearing the same thing. I just want to point that out. We did not plan it, and we wore the same thing to the holiday party. I was really excited by that.
I heard that your wife, Liz, was telling you to tuck your shirt in on the way in, and you said, "No, I'm not going to tuck my shirt in. I don't want to look like a goon." And then you got there and saw that my shirt and the same outfit was tucked in, and so you tucked yours in. Is that true?
It's close to true. So first of all, I just want to point out, we both wore a black sweater over a dress shirt, khakis and sneakers to different sneakers. I wore the Chuck Taylors. You had what? Some sort of Nike type of thing going?
I don't know what. They're new. They're like the dress sneakers, which I they're love that dress we can do that now, but I don't know what kind they are.
Mine were clearly sneakers like an a-hole in a fancy restaurant, and you wore sneakers that you could get away with. But my wife harangued me to tuck in my dress shirt, which I don't like tucking in. But I did it, and then when we got down and saw you wearing the same thing with a tucked-in dress shirt, it became sort of a, see, Andy tucks in his dress shirt type of conversation. So that was it. Our chemistry is through.
Liz seems like she would be harsh on that kind of thing.
Like
if she wins, you know, like you feel the loss. Liz is very I get intimidated by Liz. She's smart. She's quick. And I am glad that I wasn't the one that lost the tuck shirt debate to her.
It is, tuck rule is in effect in our house now, I guess. But she is aesthetically pleasing and therefore gets to run my life to a certain extent. That's just the way it goes. But our chemistry is through the roof at this point, Andy. That's sort of the moral of the story here.
You and me, dressing alike, not even planning it. Yep, I agree.
Dressing weirdly, too. Because that wasn't terribly appropriate dress for that restaurant anyway. But,
I don't have any suits that fit me. I went out, I got up to 205 pounds a few years ago, and I bought new suits accordingly. And then I lost 30 pounds by just starting to chew gum at night instead of eating. I still ate, but I just didn't keep eating. I chewed gum. I lost 30 pounds in like 3 months, and now none of my stuff fits anymore. So that what you saw me in that night, that's the nicest outfit I own.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
Oh, Andy, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to get you some new clothes for holiday season.
Number 6.
The 49ers and the Titans. This was my favorite part of this was the kicker duel down the stretch, but you probably want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, Andy.
Jimmy Garoppolo, they've won three games in a row with him. And it has looked more and more like a Shanahan team, a Shanahan offense especially, every single week. We're seeing them play with two running backs on the field. Kyle Juszczyk at fullback's one of those guys. They've even been employing him on some vertical routes at times. Their formations are diverse. They're splitting out to empty. They're getting their man zone indicators. And Garoppolo's running it all on time. And we're seeing the condensed formations with in-breaking routes and timing and rhythm throws. It's been very impressive so far. Niner fans have a lot to be excited about. And I think Garoppolo's skill set is also excellent. He's a very compact, high-velocity thrower at the intermediate levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you at this point if you're a 49ers fan? Because, look, it was Chicago, it was Houston, it was Tennessee at home at this point are the three wins. But I know
Chicago's
wins are wins.
Chicago's a very
but,
good defense, Gary. Come on.
Yes.
Chicago.
Oh, I know. We've talked about that, but I mean, they scored 15 points in that game. It was a Robbie Gould show.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a process. Look, they don't have the talent around him now either. I mean, this is a process. We knew that all along. I think anytime you see a team get closer to its identity when it's in a rebuilding stage, like at the beginning of a rebuild like this one, and when they get better over the course of the season and closer to their identity, that is hugely encouraging. And the fact that they've done it while finding the guy that looks like they believe will be their franchise QB, you couldn't ask for more. I mean, this is as successful as this season could have possibly been for San Francisco.
Yeah. And they got their kicker. 6 field goals for Robbie Gould. What a day.
Yep.
Game winner from 45. It's good stuff, Andy.
Oh,
Titans,
I actually watched that one. I
know, you saw all the kicks.
Goals. That was right down the middle. That was excellent. And he was confident. I mean, I don't think he even wanted to celebrate that much. He knew he was making that kick.
No, that was Justin Tucker stuff. 50, 48, and 45 in the fourth quarter for Gould. That's some kicking right there. Titans really needed to, they need to just split out west. They went Arizona and then San Francisco, and they really just needed one of them, and they got neither. And now they are, I don't know. I don't think they're getting in at this one. I had been sure, pretty much all season that the Titans were getting in just because of the schedule that they had, but, I don't know. I don't think they're getting in, and they don't look very good not getting in at this point.
Well, you know what? If they do get in, I don't want to call it a wasted spot, but they're not going to go far in the playoffs with their running game playing the way it has played the last few months of the season. It has not been anything close to what they need. And they've got these smash mouth backs, this power offensive line supposedly, and yet they cannot establish a base sustaining ground game. And if they don't have that, they're going to be inconsistent. They're going to have losses like this one or like last week against Arizona. So they've got some retooling to do there. They have not played to their identity. Just like we said, San Francisco is playing to their identity. Tennessee's drifting the other way right now. Guys are underachieving, and their quarterback is not playing well enough to bail them out of that.
Yeah. Mariota, I mean, look, he was bad in Arizona last week. A little bit better this week. I mean, statistically, obviously, he was he was better.
Yeah, but he's got a lot to work on. It's been a disappointing year for Mariota. Mechanically, decision-making-wise, he's taken a step back this season, and I've been disheartened to see that because I loved his skill set as a rookie, and I didn't think his sophomore season was great, but it wasn't discouraging. I think this year, year three, has been discouraging.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to something more positive.
Number 7.
Topic number 7. This is the Bills and the Dolphins. This was the home finale for the Bills, and they win this one in Bills style. They jump out to a lead. They force a couple turnovers, and it was a relatively comfortable win at home where they went 6-2 this year. So good on Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills. This is the blueprint, and when they followed this blueprint this season, they have had a really easy time winning games.
I think you said it perfectly, and no team is more dependent on having to play it from ahead. And I mean that on the positive and the negative side. I don't think they're equipped to play from behind. And I think they're very equipped to play with the lead and be and take advantage of that. I think the Bills are the team most dependent on playing with the lead.
Yeah, and certainly a bummer for the Dolphins here. Coming off that Monday night win over the Patriots, you thought maybe they could build a little momentum, make another unlikely postseason run. What a weird year for the Dolphins.
Yeah,
it's actually
kind of
amazing that they won six games.
It's been very up and down. That Patriot game, I mean, they just lined up and outplayed them. It wasn't like they eked one out. They just showed up and beat the best team in the AFC, and then here they are the next week, not quite showing up the same way.
Yeah. I mean, they have a back in Kenyon Drake at this point, if anyone was concerned after the Jay trade. But, Cutler was sloppy today. A couple of head-scratching interceptions, including the last one. They just didn't get it done. They fell behind, and exactly what you can't do when you go up to Buffalo. So they are pretty much out of it at this point. But you lose your quarterback in the summer, and then the linebacker Lawrence Timmons, it goes AWOL right before the opener. They dealt with the hurricane. This was a bizarre year for the Dolphins, and like I said,
the O-line coach.
Chris Forster. Goodness, yeah, I forgot about Chris Forster for a second. That was probably the most bizarre thing that happened all year. But those events combined usually lead to like a 3-13, 4-12 type of year. So they stuck around.
Number 8.
The Bengals and the Vikings, and the Vikings clinching the NFC North in this one. And Teddy Bridgewater did get on the field, but it was not because of anything Case Keenum did. It was the fact that this game was a complete blowout. So that was nice to see. But other than that, Keenum, efficient. Run game did its thing, and the defense just overwhelmed the Bengals in this one.
Yeah, good showing by Minnesota, and then the Marvin Lewis topic. And are we seeing the last 2 weeks of the Marvin Lewis era? And my sense is the answer is yes.
Yeah, no, he said it's done. He's moving on. What's next for Marvin Lewis at this point? I mean, does he get another head coaching job somewhere? I mean, he's an older guy, or is someone looking at him in a front office capacity?
I think from what I've heard, it sounds like he wants to go down the front office trail. And those Bengal coaches are uniquely equipped to do that, because Cincinnati has, I think, the league's smallest scouting department. And they ask their coaches, including their position coaches, which is part of the reason so many Bengals assistants have gone on to bigger jobs. Hugh Jackson, Jay Gruden, all those guys. It's because they have a huge role in the talent evaluation process in the draft. And they're very responsible for who they bring in. Marvin Lewis has overseen all that. Duke Tobin's the guy that runs their front office now, but Marvin Lewis has had a big voice in it, I would imagine. So if he wants to go down that route, he is experienced in that capacity.
Yeah, it is all but officially over in Cincinnati. Yeah, he said today that he is moving on after the season. So the Bengals have a coaching search to get underway as well. Do you think
the Marvin Lewis era has been... If you had to grade it he's been there for like, what, 12 years? I mean, longer than that. He's been there a long time. If you had to grade the Marvin Lewis era in Cincinnati, how would you grade it?
Yeah, 15 years. I think it's a solid B. I think you could even argue B+. I mean, obviously, the zero playoff wins is what you would point to if you're going to be down on it. But, where this organization was when he took over, and the fact that they won games. I mean, they made postseasons, and they did it in what was a good division as well. I mean, this was a, while he was there, the Steelers were really good. The Ravens were winning Super Bowls. Both those teams were winning Super Bowls. So to be in that division and to get to the postseason a handful of times, that's an accomplishment.
I'm with you. I agree. I think you have to go B- when you add in the zero play. If you just said there's a coach, 15 years on the job, zero playoff wins, this is probably as pretty as that can ever look. Like, that's the best 15 years, no playoff wins you'll ever see. And I think it's been a very respectable tenure by Marvin Lewis, but the zero playoff wins, that I think that will follow him a tiny bit, and I'd probably give it a B minus.
Okay.
Still better than average. C is average. Just remember that.
Yes. Yeah. All right. I think we graded him fairly. Tough but fair. Well, you were tough but fair. I was a little bit soft, but I think it's impressive what he did in that division. I give him credit for doing it in the AFC North during a really good era for the AFC North.
Number nine.
It is time for the lightning-ish round. We will start. Let's start with his old organization. Let's go Ravens. They are back on track. They beat the Browns today. It looks like they have the inside track for a playoff spot at this point. And this was look, the Browns aren't gonna light up anyone like the Steelers did. But this was a nice bounce back game for the defense, especially in sort of the post Jimmy Smith sort of portion of the season for the Ravens.
Yeah, and we'll be interested to see how Marlon Humphrey does down the stretch. I thought he played pretty well last week in his first official start. He did not play well when he filled in for Smith in the second half of the Detroit game, but last week against the Steelers coming in, I thought he looked pretty good. Joe Flacco had nice numbers again today, Gary, and that's encouraging because that is where the Ravens have been lacking, and I think throwing the ball on first and second down, that's going to be key for them to becoming a more explosive offense as they go into the postseason.
Yeah, and they, Buffalo's got to go to New England and then to Miami to finish up the season. This schedule really plays into the Ravens' favor. They host the Colts and they host the Bengals to finish things up. So you got to be feeling pretty good about this if you're the Baltimore Ravens at this point. The Saints and the Jets, no surprise, the Saints rolling in this one. I guess it was slightly more interesting than some people might expect. Jets were within striking distance in the second half, though it was never too serious. Bryce Petty, I don't know. I guess, the conversation out here in New York has been, do we see Hackenberg down the stretch? And the fact that it really hasn't even been discussed by the Jets sort of tells you where Christian Hackenberg is at this point, especially when you see Bryce Petty play, because he is pretty much the same guy he was a year ago.
I didn't see this game today, but I know I watched every snap of Bryce Petty's on film last year when he got in, and I hadn't seen him much before. And I don't study the college game. And the very first thought I had was, my goodness, he absolutely looks the part. I can see how Bryce Petty would get high on people's draft lists, but it hasn't amounted to much. I'll be interested to see how he looks on film in this one. Good on the Saints for winning games they're supposed to win. And I guess I think Vegas has him as the favorites in the NFC now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I had that conversation with a couple of people in the past week or so, and I think in the end they have the quarterback. No one else has the quarterback. It's Drew Brees, and then you look at the rest of the list. It's Keenum Keenum and Goff and Foles at this point, and
that's incredible, isn't it? That's going to be the worst quarterbacking class of a playoff class that we've probably seen in my lifetime, anyway. And we're talking about a year where the NFC has been exceptionally strong. Now, I guess if Atlanta gets in, they'll have Matt Ryan in there.
Matt Ryan.
Maybe Cam Newton or Matthew Stafford. Yep. But, those guys are not locks to be in either. You're right. That's the top of the NFC is not strong at quarterback right now.
Yeah. Two more games to go here, Andy. We had the Jaguars and the Texans. And this was, the Jaguars just destroyed the Texans this year. This was very rude, what they did in Jacksonville. It was a 45-7 final. No Leonard Fournette in this one. I had written it in my preview column. I don't know. I don't know what Fournette's future is, really. Is he a guy who's ever going to make it through 16 games of the season with his running style and with the kind of workload they ask him to take? And it really didn't matter today. And Blake Bortles was, he continues to be a little bit better, even despite what I just want to make sure I have this Jadeveon Clowney quote correct, because he was apparently not impressed. His Yeah, he was asked about Blake Bortles and whether Bortles was better, and Clowney's reply was, he's trash.
Well,
a little bit harsh.
That is, you know, Bortles has played better the last few weeks. They're playing around him. That's a team. Here's the theme of the show: who has their identity? Who plays to their identity? That's big at this point in the year. The Jaguars absolutely have their identity, and I think Bortles is getting more comfortable playing within that.
Yeah, they. I mean, look, they're making it a three-team race in the AFC playoffs, I guess, when you look at it, because obviously they've already gone to Pittsburgh and beaten up on the Steelers. So it'll be interesting to see what they are in January, because, you know, as you always say, playoff football, run the ball, play defense, you got a chance. Last game of the week, these were two teams. I'm not sure if they were technically eliminated coming into the game, but they are both eliminated at this point, but they played anyway. And that was Washington and Arizona out in FedEx Field, and the Redskins win this one, 20-15. Blaine Gabbert had a couple of chances to bring Arizona back late, and was not able to do it. Other than that, weird note, Andy, the Redskins swept the NFC West this year,
really?
And a pretty good NFC West.
Yeah,
and they won. They won at LA and at Seattle too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Blaine Gabbert thing, every time you watch him, it's the same issue. He's a great illustration of what creates success or lack of success in the NFL, because we just said Bryce Petty looks the part. Well, times 10, that's true for Blaine Gabbert. But he doesn't have pocket poise, and he moves within the pocket when he doesn't need to. He moves out of the pocket when he doesn't need to, and he creates his own pressure too often. And sometimes he does it great. Sometimes he plays right on schedule, and that's when he's really looking the part. But it's the pocket poise and the natural sense and feel for playing in the pocket. That's what he's never developed, and I think Arizona has badly wanted to see him develop that this year because they've kept him on the field. They see the talent. Yeah. They see the looks the part. But if it hasn't happened yet, and it didn't happen under Bruce Arians and that scheme, which is pretty quarterback friendly, if you can throw and he can, then it's not going to happen.
Yep, that's it. That's a tough note to wrap up the lightning round on, but that is how we will do it.
Number 10.
Topic 10: the weekly awards. Offensive Player of the Week. Andy, would you like to go first?
I got to go. You know, we didn't talk about Kareem Hunt and what he did Saturday night, but I thought he had an excellent game against the Chargers. Kind of a disappointing Chargers run defense. They've had some issues at linebacker. They had guys get hurt in that game. But Hunt is a very patient, good vision runner, and we saw that on full display Saturday night.
Yeah. I'm going Rob Gronkowski. So sort of a little bit of the well, I think they did know what they were missing last Monday night, but it was out in full force in this one. And when they needed to come back late, it was three straight long passes to Gronkowski. That it was just a lightning quick 2-minute drive that the Patriots used to score what would be the winning touchdown. And at that point, it looked like it had sealed the game. But obviously, stuff happened afterwards. And you can either rewind to the beginning of this podcast to hear about it, or you can listen to the MMQB podcast with Peter King. Hear all about it. Defensive Player of the Week, Andy, who do you got?
I'm going to go with Sean Smith. We've been hard on him a little bit, the Raiders cornerback. He traveled with Dez Bryant and this guy. I know Bryant had the 40-something yard catch against him. That was pretty decent coverage by Smith. It didn't work out on that play, though, and he didn't find the ball. But that was the only really negative play on the night. He had the two interceptions. He's held up okay the last few weeks. So I want to go Sean Smith because we've been critical, and this is a week where you cannot be critical of him. He had a decent game.
Oh, good. I'm giving it to Tre'Davious White in Buffalo. They didn't exactly go after him, but once the Dolphins had fallen behind, they were trying to get some deep stuff to Devontae Parker, and it was mostly against White. And he he gave up a little bit, but not a whole lot. He won a lot of those matchups, and he was solid once again throughout this one, and looks like he is going to be a guy who is a number one corner there for a while. Special teams player of the week.
I'm going Robbie Gould because I want to see if you can come up with one. I want to see if you can come up with one right here. Go ahead. Who's yours? Quick.
For a second straight week, you took Gold last week. Or no, a couple weeks ago. His revenge game. You had Robbie Gold.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I did. Yeah, and that Bears, yep, I've got him again. I think you're stalling right now. I don't think you had another special teams guy.
Oh, I have one. Oh, I have one queued up. What, you could have gone Chris Jones for that run in the Sunday Nighter, but I'm going Matt Hawk, Dolphins punter, for heads up football on the onside kick, because they did the thing where they line up the two kickers and Hawk was the decoy guy, so he came through and faked his kick, and most guys would have just like run to the sideline and sort of celebrated their successful feigning of a kick. But Hawk stayed ready. So then when the kick came through and whoever the Bills guy was who tried to slide on the ball and didn't come up with it and basically knocked it towards Hawk, he was there for the recovery.
All right.
It was a great story.
We've had some good Dolphins onside kick stories lately.
It really is. Yeah, great story told well by me. And Coach of the Week.
Oh, Coach of the Week. You better go ahead here.
Oh, I'm going. I'm going Wade Phillips for the bottling up of Russell Wilson, which is even when the Jaguars got the better of Wilson last week. Obviously, Wilson still made a couple of plays in that game, but this was dominance, and this was also only round two for Wade Phillips against Russell Wilson since taking over the Rams. So, nice work.
I think I'm going Mike Zimmer for beating his old team, the Bengals. Not that that ended badly. You know, I mean, it's not a revenge game. He had a nice tenure there in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But to go out and the reason I want to go Zimmer, because I think he's probably going to get my Coach of the Year vote this year, barring, you know, we'll see what happens with the Eagles with their backup QB mm-hmm. and how Doug Peterson continues to handle that. But the point I want to make with Zimmer, you know, like Sean McVay has helicoptered into L.A. and has lit them on fire and they're having a great year. And that's wonderful. There's something to be said for that. Mike Zimmer did that a few years ago and has sustained it and has built a culture there. And the Vikings have gotten better each year. Here's back to the theme. We'll wrap up on this within their identity and establishing who they are and what kind of football team they are and playing consistently week to week. So McVay's had a great year. Peterson's a newer coach. He's had a great year. They're all aspiring to become what Mike Zimmer has become in Minnesota. And I think we want to not overlook Zimmer while he's become that.
Absolutely. That's a good one, Andy. Off the top of your head, too. That was good.
Yeah, you could tell I'd forgotten the Coach of the Week again this week, couldn't you?
That's all right. You were just overwhelmed by Robbie Gold and that fourth quarter performance. He was really good. Robbie Gold was really good today.
He was good today. I agree. I did watch the kicks because he was having a good day.
Yeah. All right. That's a wrap for this episode. Thanks, as always, to producers Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, the team at Cadence 13, always making us sound good. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. As we mentioned, we'll be a little bit later. We'll be a day late next week on Christmas week. And on New Year's, we'll be just a little bit later on New Year's Day, which is Monday this year. But we'll be there. We'll be there for you, and we will be honored if you spend your holiday season with us. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.